Laura Ling and Yuna Lee arrived home safely yesterday.
We were shocked, but we knew instantly in our hearts that the nightmare of our lives was finally coming to an end.
But will the nightmare for the citizens of North Korea ever end? We talked to two psychiatrists on post-traumatic stress disorder on the show today, but maybe the people who need it most are still imprisoned in the Hermit Kingdom. Just a thought on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Thursday, August 6th. Yeah, who are the hostages? The people of North Korea or those two journalists? I'm John Hockenberry, joined this morning by Amy Holmes. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. On the show today, former President Bill Clinton, fix-it man, will rate his performance in North Korea. And the GOP isn't backing Sonia Sotomayor in her Senate vote today. How will that play at the polls? And ahead of Afghanistan's elections this month, we'll take a closer look at President Karzai. But first, we have Dr. Yael Danieli on the phone, a clinical psychologist and trauma specialist. So, doctor, who needs a psychologist more, Laura Ling and Yuna Lee, or the people of North Korea?
Well, the people of North Korea need a whole lot more than a psychologist. But that the psychological understanding would be part of what they need when they have the opportunity.
I agree. Dr. Danieli, stay with us. We'll continue the conversation with you, but first, the headlines.
The Senate votes today on the cash for clunkers extension after the Senate Majority Leader threatened to keep them working through the weekend. Automakers are hinting they'll boost production and bring back some laid-off workers if the extra cash comes through. Overseas, Afghan officials say at least 20 people heading to a wedding were killed by a roadside bomb in the country's south. The attack happened as the new NATO head was making his first trip to southern Afghanistan. Amy?
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton meets with the leaders from Somalia's interim government today. Somalia's leaders are calling the talks a golden opportunity, saying they show the U.S. is serious about helping the country establish peace. Back in the U.S., the Obama administration will announce plans today to put federal workers in charge of the country's biggest immigration detention facilities. Since 2007, private contractors have been doing the job.
The president sits down today with Senate Finance Committee members in the Oval Office. It could be a very, very big sort of roundtable discussion about healthcare. A Charles Manson follower convicted of trying to assassinate President Gerald Ford is being released from a Texas prison later this month. Lynette Squeaky Fromm was 26 when she aimed a pistol at Ford in 1975. Secret Service agents wrestled it away. Markets were mostly flat yesterday, but the Nasdaq closed down about 1%. The Dow opens this morning at 9281. The S&P starts trading at 10.03, and the Nasdaq begins at 1993. A lot of people in America, the big headline today is Paula Abdul leaving American Idol.
Oh.
It's kind of a, she's sort of a head, at the head of a huge cultural genre in America, someone who's famous for being famous.
For being having famous. Been not that famous?
Well, possibly, yes. So the question for you is, are you sorry to see her go? Who else is famous for just being famous who you'd like to say goodbye to? Paula Abdul, Joe the Plumber, Sarah
Palin,
maybe?
Can we add Paris Hilton to that
Paris
list?
Hilton, sure. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. Abdul's reportedly turned down $5 million. She's that famous.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here. So, Amy, you know, I may be out on a limb here, okay? But historically speaking, I think it's fair to say that this scenario, until yesterday, might not have inspired total confidence or hope in the hearts of, say, two young single women.
We were told that we were going to a meeting. We were taken to a location, and when we walked in through the doors, we saw standing before us President Bill Clinton.
Okay, they're not both single, all right. But for Laura Ling, journalist, and Yuna Lee, seeing Bill Clinton, there in that room, by surprise, marked the beginning of the hope that their 12-year sentence in North Korea might be ending. Beginning of hope for two terrified journalists. We're going to talk about what the rehabilitation psychologically means for them in a moment. But it's also the end of a political rehabilitation for Bill Clinton, who suffered mightily during the campaign, but suddenly looks like a hero this morning. Peter Baker, reporter for our partners, The New York Times, joins us now. Wow. Bill Clinton, a hero today. This is the end of a very long sort of political retooling for Bill Clinton. He's looking pretty good this morning, Peter.
Well, that's right. I think, you know, here he is almost 9 years after his presidency, and he's showing that he still has a place to on the world stage, even in the era of Obama.
Now, it seems to me, and I'm just, looking behind the scenes here, that some of this is conditional on him not actually grabbing the microphone and starting to talk. He didn't speak yesterday. He hasn't made any official comment on what happened. Seems like he's not likely to do so. Do you think that Bill Clinton can actually maintain that discipline?
Well, you know, what his office told us yesterday is that he wanted this to be the day for the families. He did not speak, as you say, at the event. On the other hand, he does have an event scheduled today, I believe, in Harlem to announce, I think, an AIDS program. And it wouldn't surprise me if that became an opportunity for him to say a few words about the trip. But, you know, look, he's been doing this for a long time. He has a real sense of moment. He has a real sense of how to play an event like this, when it's right to talk and when it's not.
Peter Baker, this is Amy Holmes here. So you can't help, at least I can't help, but wonder about this psychodrama between Secretary Clinton and President Clinton. He certainly has upstaged her this week. Do you think that she, you know, is in any way irritated by this, or that they are building the Clinton brand? They are burnishing the Clinton name.
Well, you know, it's a good question. Everybody would like to know the answer, wouldn't they? I think certainly the timing of him landing in Pyongyang at the same time she's landing in Nairobi for the beginning of an 11-day trip through Africa put her way on the back burner. And, certainly in the short term, he has upstaged her, you know, intentionally or not.
I loved, Peter, that it was Al Gore who noted Obama's role in this and Secretary Clinton's role in this when he gave his remarks yesterday.
Well, there's a whole, you know, series of interplays and odd relationships here that are at play. I mean, here, you know, Bill Clinton and Al Gore haven't been all that close in the last 8, 9, 10 years either, you know, and obviously there was a rivalry last year between the Clintons and President Obama. So,
but I read it in the Times. Adam Nagorny had that piece yesterday. They hugged for 5 minutes or so, 5 seconds, 5 seconds. He timed
the
hug.
It was quite a while. Somebody, a friend of mine, compared it to Alan Tipper's awkward kiss at the convention in 2000.
Interesting. Well, before we go, any sort of remarks on the sort of powerful pair of Bill Clinton and John Podesta, former chief of staff for Bill Clinton and now head of a think tank in Washington, emerging from that plane? There's the Clinton brand that Amy was talking about, but there's also Clinton Inc. here. Is Podesta part of that?
Yeah, definitely part of that. Well, Podesta is the link at the moment between the Clinton and Obama world. He was President Clinton's last chief of staff. Chief of staff, by the way, when President Clinton wanted to go to North Korea in the dwindling days of his presidency and couldn't make it work. Today, he is the head of a think tank, but he's also an informal advisor to President Obama. He was the head of his transition team, and he has done an awful lot to staff this administration with people from his think tank over the last number of months. So he is a real bridge, I think, between these two.
Lots of bridges and beyond the 21st century, that's for sure. Peter
that's
Baker,
right.
White House correspondent for The New York Times. Lots to think about there. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks very much. Have a good evening.
Sure.
So political recovery for Bill Clinton seems to be underway, but recovery and rehabilitation might be a little bit more complicated for Una Lee and Laura Ling. Here's what Laura told reporters.
The past 140 days have been the most difficult, heart-wrenching time of our lives.
Joining us to discuss the process of recovery is Dr. Yael Danieli, a clinical psychologist and trauma specialist who has a private practice here in New York City. We're also joined by Anthony Feinstein, professor of psychiatry at the University of Toronto and author of Journalists Under Fire, The Psychological Hazards of Covering War. Dr. Danieli, I want to start with you. You've written and counseled extensively on the emotional aftermath of hostages and political prisoners. Can you help us understand what Laura and Una might be feeling right now as they adjust to this new freedom?
Of course, right now they are probably not sure whether they are sleeping or awake, whether they are in a nightmare or in a happy dream. They are the sounds, the smells, the whether they are in their own beds or in the United States or in North Korea.
So you would say that they probably are feeling just total disorientation.
Yes, disorientation and somewhat of a culture shock on some level.
Do victims of these types of circumstances of, you know, being held prisoner or hostage, do they suffer a sense of emotional isolation that no one can really understand what they went through?
They tend to. They depends to a large degree also if they were imprisoned together or separately. My impression is that they must have been together because they speaking. She used the word "we." So my impression is that they were together, which is helpful.
Interesting. Dr. Feinstein, I want to bring you into this. You work with journalists who cover war. Do journalists suffer in particular ways? Do they often feel obligated, for example, to go public with their story before they're ready because of their profession as storytellers?
I think there are going to be many pressures and stresses on the journalists here. Certainly that's one that you've highlighted, but that's not an invariable situation. I also think that much will depend on how the journalists were treated while in captivity. It's also been my experience with journalists that the range of stress that they're subjected to while held captive can vary. The journalists who can be treated fairly and quite well while in captivity, they can be fed. They don't necessarily have to be beaten or tortured. And then I've come across situations where journalists have been treated abysmally while in captivity, threatened with execution, mock execution, etc. So I think a lot can depend on the circumstances of the captivity.
Well, Dr. Feinstein, it seems to me that in this particular case, there are a couple of differences between a lot of the hostages that we've covered and that you've focused on in your research. I mean, they wanted to see the inside of North Korea. As traumatic as this must have been for them, they also had a window, an absolutely fascinating window on a society that almost no journalist gets to see. And in telling that story, it seems to me they have a leg up on the aftermath that someone who is maybe chained to a bed in Lebanon doesn't have.
Correct. I think, you know, I'm not familiar with the exact circumstances of their captivity, but you raise a good point. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in future as they recover from this ordeal, because that may in fact turn out to be a positive factor when they look back on this awful captivity for themselves.
Dr. Danieli, how do they go back to normal? Is that possible after this kind of experience?
The phrase "going back to normal" always worries me because you don't go back. And there is the cultural demand to go back to normal, but we just don't do that. And if there is the pressure to do that, it stands in the way of recovery. But I wanted to, as journalists, actually, there are people with a mission and people who are used to covering stories, which means to put experiences into words, and the articulation of traumatic experiences is helpful in itself in the struggle to heal. So as journalists, they do have a leg up. But as people who are public victims, they will have special challenges. In the sense that their natural recovery will very well be interfered with.
And doctor, I'm sure I speak for all of us that we are all pulling for these two young ladies.
The public celebrity complicates matters.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. That was Dr. Danieli and Dr. Feinstein, both psychiatrists who study this issue closely.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.